There's an image or an analogy that's used in the ancient Buddhist texts. It's that of a shepherd or cow herder who someone's tending the cows, and they're out in the fields wandering around grazing in the pasture. And when it's the season for the rice to be growing, the rice paddies are out there. It's very important that the person tending the cows watches very closely, stays very close, and makes sure the cows don't wander into the rice fields and eats the rice in the fields or the plants. Just stays on the edge of the dikes or the paddies and eats the grass on the side and things like that. But when the rice is crop has been harvested, then the person tending the cows doesn't have to watch so closely, and the person can just be up against the trunk of a tree, relaxed, staying attentive and alert so that the cows don't wander off, but they don't have to be so vigilant, kind of watching it every moment, watching so tightly or closely, but can be there resting against a tree, kind of relaxed, very spacious, very open awareness, as opposed to this kind of constricted, kind of watching closely. And that this analogy is used to describe a quality of mindfulness. That mindfulness is like the person tending the cows when the rice has been harvested. That the kind of awareness, the kind of attention that's relaxed but open, not anxious, not kind of riding every moment so tightly, but relaxed, open awareness, kind of resting in the armchair of the easy trunk of the tree, is the quality of mindfulness, mindful attention. And that's very important for some people to realize, because some people, when they're trying to be mindful, they sometimes are a little bit too vigilant or too forceful or striving or too anxious or trying too much to get something to happen. And this quality of being relaxed, at ease, is a very huge part of what mindfulness is. So mindfulness is the topic for today. I want to talk about this very key aspect of Buddhism. It's very central to our tradition, the insight meditation tradition. So what we're cultivating is mindfulness. It's what we're all about. And sometimes in Buddhism, mindfulness and Buddhism are almost equated. Mindfulness is so centrally important for Buddhism that they're almost indistinguishable. And it's been said that many different spiritual traditions have mindfulness as part of it, paying attention to what's happening in the present moment. But it really characterizes Buddhism. It's kind of like at the center, the heart of what Buddhist practice is trying to cultivate and do, is to be mindful, be attentive. Mindfulness is seen as one of the primary vehicles or primary paths for becoming free, for liberation, for awakening. So what is mindfulness? And the word for mindfulness is sati. And sati is, in Sanskrit, is smriti. In Pali, it's sati, the ancient language. And it's a word that's very closely connected to the word for remember and or memory. So someone, Ananda, the disciple of the Buddha, who supposedly memorized all the discourses of the Buddha and then preserved them for us, preserved them for the future, he was said to have a very good memory. Probably nowadays we say photographic memory, but he could remember really well. And he is said to have a very high degree of sati. He had this ability of memory. And it might be useful to think of memory as being, to use a synonym, that is to recollect. If you can recollect something well, it's kind of like you have memorized it well, you have it in your memory really well. But the word recollect has in English, has the feeling of to recollect, to regather together. Because one of the functions of mindfulness, besides helping with memory, is helping the mind to stay present here so that it can recollect itself here, to remember to be here, to remember that it's important to be present here. In the ancient definition of mindfulness, it's that capacity of the mind that keeps the mind from floating away, or keeps an idea or a theme or an activity that we're paying attention to, keeps that idea or theme or activity from floating away. So or the mind floating away. And often, you know, probably most of you have seen in this 45-minute meditation session we had that your mind had a tendency to float away. And sometimes it took a while to realize that it even happened. You were just so floated away. And then you come back and start over again. Mindfulness is what keeps the mind anchored in the present moment or here, so it doesn't forget the present moment or recollects itself, collects things together here in the present moment. I think of it as, or sometimes it's talked about as a presence of mind. There's a certain kind of presence when the mind is present, a presence of heart or presence of mind. We do activities or we live our life, we go through life with a presence of mind. And one of the qualities of presence of mind is to be present, to be here, and to know what's happening as you go through something. If you do something with a presence of mind, you're really there for it. You're not absent from it, you're not haphazardly there, but you're really there. You're doing it with a presence of mind. It means you're doing it consciously, intentionally, clearly. This is what I'm doing. And this sense of a presence of mind, sometimes people emphasize the idea of presence. They were cultivating presence. Just presence is enough. And presence is an odd and interesting word, because sometimes mindfulness doesn't seem personal. It's not something we're doing. It's almost, maybe stretching a little bit, but it's kind of like, you know, some presence is here. We're present, or there's a presence here. It's, you know, it's yours in a sense, but is it really yours? Is it really your doing? Sometimes it's very strong, the sense of, can be very strong, that there's a presence here. Where is it? It's just kind of here. There's some kind of impersonal, some larger kind of field of attentiveness, of awareness, of heightened attention. Occasionally, when I've talked to theists, to Christians or Jews or people like that, and they ask, you know, what is your spiritual practice? And if it felt right in the context of saying this, you have to kind of give me some permission or some imagine maybe the context is appropriate. But I'll tell them that, what I practice is the presence of God. And because a sense of the presence of mind, the presence of mindfulness, the awakefulness that can come with this practice can have this impersonal quality. It's almost as if it's larger than myself or bigger than myself. And I can't even take responsibility for times when it's really large. And so what is it? And I can easily imagine someone falling into a very strong sense of presence and not being able to identify with anything that they normally identify with, and then trying to find a concept outside of themselves, a reference outside of themselves, or some reference in their normal cultural kind of a religious background, and they'll fall on the presence of God. This must be God, the sense of very strong presence of being here. So mindfulness can be at times a very powerful sense of presence. Other times it can be something that is desperately lacking, and we kind of wake up for 2 seconds and then off we go again for another 5 minutes, and then we try to remember, oh, I'm supposed to be here. Okay, let's come back. I like wakefulness as a synonym for mindfulness, to be awake. And because wakefulness, if you're going to be awake to something, it generally, in my mind, it has a connotation of simply being present for it as it is. There's no association you're trying to do something with it, or trying to fix it, or trying to get away from it, or trying to judge it. You're simply awake. I was really awake to this phenomena. So when we're cultivating mindfulness, we're trying to be awake to what our experience of life is in the present moment, to be awake, now, to be awake, wake up. And it's a very common term in Buddhism and in other places too, I guess. Some people carry around a magazine that they try to pass on called Wake Up. Awake, that's what it's called, isn't it? And I smile when I see the magazine going around. And sometimes when we use the mindfulness, some people have been around the mindfulness tradition for a long time, have all kinds of associations with the word. And some of those associations are unfortunate. And sometimes people have picked up the association of striving, of pushing, or noting in some really kind of straining way or neurotic way, or you know, they have some idea of what it is they're trying to do. Oh, if I'm mindful, I'm supposed to get concentrated, or if I'm mindful, then I'm supposed to be really still, or if I'm mindful, it's just supposed to be just beautiful. Everything's going to be okay. And whatever, some association. But for me, at least at this point, the word awake is free of a lot of those associations. Sometimes a word that frees me from the associations is the word notice. That when we practice mindfulness, we're only practicing noticing. It's a noticing practice. So when people can come and ask you, you know, what is your religious practice? You could say, you know, presence of God, and that sounds, you know, wow, I didn't know Buddhists did that. And they would be marveled, like, what, you know, presence of God, that seems pretty noble and great in certain circles. But if you say, you tell someone, you know, you're a Buddhist practitioner, and they say, wow, that's cool. I mean, Buddhism, that's cool, and Zen and all that, I'm sure that, you know, tell me what you do. I mean, this is a lofty, great, authoritative religion. What do you do? What's your core practice? And you tell them, oh, I practice noticing. You know, what? Noticing? That's all you can say? You know, it's a great religion. All you do is notice things. So you can call it presence of God or noticing, you know, whatever works best in different situations. But to notice. And I like the word noticing because it also frees up us from these associations of what mindfulness might we think it is and what it's supposed to be. I wanted to read a poem by Naomi Shihab Nye. And I think it's a little bit of an odd poem in some ways, but it's also a very nice poem, and it makes a very interesting point. Though in a kind of, maybe I shouldn't say too much first, I should read it. When they say, don't I know you, say no. When they invite you to the party, remember what parties are like before answering. Someone telling you in a loud voice they once wrote a poem, greasy sausage balls on a paper plate, then reply. If they say, we should get together, say, why? It's not that you don't love them anymore. You're trying to remember something too important to forget. Trees, the monastery bell at twilight. Tell them you have a new project. It'll never be finished. When someone recognizes you in a grocery store, nod briefly and become a cabbage. When someone you haven't seen in 10 years appears at the door, don't start singing him all your new songs. You'll never catch up. Walk around feeling like a leaf. Know you could tumble any second. Then decide what to do with your time. Walk around feeling like a leaf. Know you can tumble any second. Then decide what to do with your time. So, it's not that you don't love them anymore. You're trying to remember something too important to forget. So mindfulness has this quality of remembering something. And is there something to be remembered in the present moment that's too important to forget? And is it more important than a lot of other things we could do? Or do we tend to lose the treasure, some treasure, by rushing headlong into many different activities or into many requests, or maybe not even many, but it can be a simple one. One, someone calls up and says, I need help, or someone calls up and says anything, and does a guilt trip, or does, you know, anything, pulls on your strings. And I mean, maybe those wasn't good examples, but how easy it is to get caught by life, caught by activities, And being involved in life is not wrong. And activities are not wrong. But being caught by them, being lost in them, to lose that presence of mind. And the presence of mind is the treasure. And the presence of mind is kind of invisible. And the presence of mind, the presence of here, has no monetary value, has no recreational value, has no, you know, there's a lot of things that normally we want in our life, things we call the quality of life issues, that the presence of mind doesn't directly relate to. And so because it doesn't do a lot of good, in some obvious way or direct way or something, to many things we most want in life, or think we want, we tend to ignore it. But the argument here, the suggestion is that your presence, the very simple quality of being present here, presence of mind, presence of being, here, is the most valuable thing that a person can rest in, to be in. And it's something you can take with you anywhere you go. So it's a kind of sense of deep, it's kind of a sense of well-being that you can carry with you wherever you go. And to stay grounded or resting in a sense in that well-being and not sacrifice it for the activity you're about to engage in. So then the challenge is, how do you engage in activity? How do you go to the party? And not get so caught up in the social dynamics and do they like me, do they not like me, or what am I supposed to say next, or, you know, will anybody talk to me, or you know, or let me tell you about politics, you know, and suddenly you're lost in a conversation about politics or whatever it might be. And then we find ourselves having left, having kind of out of the body experience, out of the presence experience, where we don't no longer staying resting here. There's something about the presence of mind where we're present but not self-conscious. We know we're kind of like here in this radiant field of awareness, but at the same time we can kind of disappear. In the ancient texts, a contrast is made between a mind which is constricted and a mind which is expansive or boundless. And mindfulness is associated with a mind which is boundless or expansive. They don't use the word spacious because I don't know, maybe they weren't spacious back then. It wasn't a concept that they used in the ancient world in the same way we do. But I think it translates quite well to the idea of being very spacious. A mind which is very spacious, very open, is a mind which is mindful, a mind which has a sense of presence of mind that is awake here and now to what's going on. So how do we discover that treasure? How do we convince our heart or our mind that there's a treasure, there's a great value, there's a richness in being here? One way is by practicing it and beginning to see the fruits of it, the benefits of it, finding there's some sense of well-being here. Sometimes that's easy, and sometimes it might take several years of practice to really be grounded or really feel convinced that there's a tremendous satisfaction that's incomparable to anything else life can give in being fully here, awake, and present. Another way of being convinced of the value of mindfulness is see some of the other benefits it provides. One of the very important benefits it's said to provide, or that it does, is it gives you a level of choice in how you live your life. If you're really present, if you have a presence of mind of what you're doing, then you're mindful of what you say when you're saying it. You're aware. And, you know, you can make a mistake in speech, say something very kind of flip. You know, it's been said that it can take years to cultivate a good friendship and one sentence to ruin it. Say the wrong thing. And I've been in situations where I've said things that I regretted and I realized afterwards that I didn't have much presence of mind when I was doing it. I wasn't present, really. If I'd been present and really knew what was going on, had this broad awareness of present moment awareness, and could feel the motivations, the impulse to speak as I was speaking, was tracking what was going on, I would have tracked what I was saying, the impulse, and I would have held back, not said it. Or activities, different activities. So mindfulness is considered to be a very important doorway or vehicle to making wise choices in life, living a wise life. And that's one of the primary, one of the very important functions it has in Buddhism, is that as you become more and more mindful, your person then can distinguish between those activities which are helpful or healthy and those activities which are not helpful for our lives or unhealthy. And so then begin to kind of choosing one over the other. And the marvelous thing is that as you develop more healthy qualities of speech, qualities of activity, healthy choices for the mind, what the mind does, it builds on itself over time. Health begets more health. And as we get more healthy, it tends to be easier to have a presence of mind, to be here, present. If you choose activity which is unhealthy, ways of speaking which are unhealthy, spending a lot of time gossiping and slandering and being angry at people and complaining, it can feel very somehow satisfying in the moment to do that. But the chances are that it's not a lot of presence. You're not really grounded and centered in that kind of speech. And it tends to create more unhealth, tends to reinforce that habit more and more. So it's said that mindfulness helps to undercut or undermine habit formations. That sense of being able to choose, be present, be mindful, and to choose what we do, or at least choose what we don't do. Maybe choosing what we don't do is one of the most useful things you can do. Tanisara Bhikkhu, who's a Buddhist monk who's going to speak here in a couple of weeks, he likens the mind to a corporate boardroom. And you have all these directors of the board, and you have a chairperson of the board. And the chair has no control over what the directors say. Suddenly the director stands up, and the director says, you know, I think we should do this, I think we should do that, and have all these crazy ideas. And the chair can't control the directors. However, the chair has one very important function or power, and that is she has the veto power. So someone can suggest something, and the chair says, no, we're not going to do that. And so that's part of the function of mindfulness, is to place us in a situation where clearly we're aware of what's going on, so we can exercise our veto power. We can't control the mind, all the different impulses in the mind, all the thoughts, the intentions that arise. You don't have to criticize your mind for having those. You just have to have a lot of confidence that you are not those things. And if anything, you're the chairperson of your mind. You say, oh no, I don't have to do that. I don't have to say that or do that or continue that train of thought. So mindfulness puts us in the place of choice. An important choice we have is a choice to say no. Mindfulness is also a, it's a little more difficult to talk about, but mindfulness tends to bring together with it other qualities, or it tends to evoke or fertilize or develop other psychological qualities that are considered to be healthy to have. The mindfulness tends to bring along with it a good sense of effort or energy, not initially sometimes, but it tends to kind of be a magnet to like energy, magnet towards concentration, stability. It tends to be a magnet for greater wisdom and understanding. It tends to be a magnet for joy, for tranquility, for peace, and for equanimity. And it's said that it's kind of like a, if you imagine a boat plowing through the water, and the bow of the boat kind of cuts through the water, kind of in very kind of gently pushes the water to the side so the rest of the boat can follow nicely. And if you have a flat-fronted boat, it's a lot more resistance. So you have this point that kind of breaks the water apart, separates it, and then everything else of the boat follows. And so mindfulness is like the bow of the boat. you have mindfulness in the lead, then a lot of other things will follow in its wake, will be carried along. If you have other things in the front, if you have trying to get concentrated or trying to have effort or trying to have wisdom or confidence or many other things sometimes in the front, sometimes it doesn't work so well. But mindfulness is considered always to be useful, to always have mindfulness in the front. Just fall back on mindfulness. Fall back on noticing. What's going on now? What's here? Can I wake up to this right now here? Now, one of the very simple ways of finding yourself in the present moment, because it can be hard, it can be very hard to come back. But one very simple way that I use sometimes when my mind is most scattered, when I sit meditating and my mind wanders off and just wants to be off someplace else a lot, I'll use a very simple word. And that's the word here, H-E-R-E. Not like a command to a dog. But, you know, just say the word here. And just a reminder, here. And like, oh, this is where I am. I'm here, here and now. This is where I am. What's this like? Kind of like I'm an anthropologist from Mars. And somehow I popped into a human body. Here, what's this experience like? Oh, here. And it's not an attempt to push anything away. It's like, oh, here. Here is a person whose mind is scattered. Wow. Here and now, this is what it's like to have, this is what it's like to be a human mind which is completely out of control. Here. This is what it's like. But as soon as I say here that way, then I'm here. You know, I'm not exactly lost, even though my mind might be still racing in other ways. And so in a very simple movement of here, noticing, oh, this is what's happening now. And if I do that a number of times, sometimes I have to do it a lot of times, but very gently, here, here, the mind begins to relax and soften. And the mind needs to be relaxed if there's going to be a presence of mind. If the mind is anxious, it's very hard to have a presence of mind. So one of the very important necessities for mindfulness is to be relaxed. And so just saying the word here, for me at least, sometimes begins that relaxation process. And it's very important that when I say here, that I don't have an agenda. Just here. And open to what's happening now here. And if it gets going really well, then I'm really kind of here and feel like I'm going really well, I'm saying here, then I imagine a little bit that it finally becomes here, here. like when you approve what's going on. Here, here. Another quality of mindfulness, which I think is important to understand, is that mindfulness is like water that can flow into any container you put the water into. So, and you can pour water into a square container and it takes the shape of the square container. You pour it into a round container, it takes the round shape. Whatever the shape of the container is, the water basically takes that shape. And so mindfulness is like that. It's kind of invisible. It takes whatever shape, whatever's going on. And this is important because sometimes we have an idea of what it is like to be mindful. Oh, when I'm mindful, I'm supposed to be calm and serene. Or I'm supposed to be spacious. Or I'm supposed to be very penetrating. Or I'm supposed to be a certain way. And there are sometimes associated factors that come along with mindfulness, like tranquility and penetration. But mindfulness is sometimes deceptively simple. So that when there's agitation, when you're sitting here and you're agitated, there might not be much tranquility or equanimity or peace or penetration of what's going on, clarity of what's going on. But in the mindfulness, the presence is kind of like the presence that's within the agitation. It's kind of like flown in there. And so don't confuse the agitation for the presence. But don't think that the mindfulness is supposed to be separate from the agitation also. Does that make sense? So whatever is going on, the mindfulness can be there regardless of what the inner quality might be. So you're mindful. Another important aspect of mindfulness is in the ancient world they talked about mindfulness is like the gatekeeper at a fortified city. And nowadays I heard someone use the analogy of a doorkeeper at a hotel, because we don't have, you know, guards at the city entrance anymore. The guard at the gate to the city, the fortified city, no one goes in and out of the city except through that gate where the gatekeeper stands. And the gatekeeper doesn't follow. If someone comes in through the gate or wants to leave, the guardkeeper can choose, has the veto power. You can't come in. Or you can't go out. The gatekeeper also just simply recognizes and sees what's going on, going in and out. But the gatekeeper doesn't, if someone comes into the city, the gatekeeper doesn't kind of just follow them around into the city. And the gatekeeper doesn't go out into the fields outside the city when someone else goes out. The gatekeeper just stays there at the entrance and watches what comes in and what comes out. So mindfulness has this quality of being a gatekeeper. It just tracks what's coming and going. And occasionally it'll say yes or no. Something wants to go this way or that way. But it just kind of watches, comes and goes, but it doesn't go after anything. It doesn't get involved in anything. It just watches, hear it coming and going. A much more modern analogy for this that I use sometimes, it's actually a little bit different idea, but is that of a washing machine. When you're meditating, sometimes it's kind of like you're a washing machine in this way. You put your dirty clothes in the washing machine, and you put your soap in, and you turn the machine on, and the machine agitates the dirty clothes, and all this the dirt goes out into the water. And if you open up the washing machine and look into the water before it drains out, you see all the dirty water, you're happy. Very few people complain or upset or depressed the fact the water is dirty. It's like, wow, it's working. Isn't that great? And that's really good. It's working. And then it drains out the dirty water. And then, you know, maybe it has to rinse it a few more times, and each time you rinse it, it gets cleaner and cleaner because it's doing its work. When you meditate, the meditation is like the washing machine, and the mindfulness is like the soap, maybe. I don't know. But awareness, maybe mindfulness is like the soap and the awareness, kind of a little bit everything. But awareness, what comes into awareness is like the water. So when you're meditating and something arises from inside into awareness, so you know that it's happening, it's come into the water and it's on its way out. So it means whatever had to happen has already happened. The cleansing process has worked when it comes into awareness. What that means is when you meditate, you can just be content. The darkest, ugliest thing has arisen and you're aware of it. Oh, look at that. It's on its way out. It's in the water. Because the fact that I know it means it's going in the water. It's on its way out. Provided you don't get involved in it. It's very common, of course, for us to not see it as the water, but to see it, this is who I am. Or this is really important. The fact that it's present means I have to react and get anxious and nervous and fight it and do all kinds of things with it. But when things arise, especially things which are uncomfortable to look at, unpleasant, just think of it as, oh, great. The fact that I'm aware of it now, it means most of the work's already been done. Now I've got to just wait for it to drain. And that's just a passive process, right? So this idea of the doorkeeper who watches things come and go, doesn't get involved. I use the idea of the washing machine to kind of try to inculcate the same idea. When certain things arise in awareness, don't be anxious about it. Don't be concerned about it. Just be content they're there. And just be content that's enough just to know that they're there. And this ability to be content, just to know that something is there, is one of the ways then to discover this wonderful quality of the presence of presence. To be content to know what's here, and that's enough, is half the way to cultivating a strong sense of presence. And then once we have this presence, then can we begin extending that into our daily life? It's one thing to find a sense of presence in meditation, and it's a whole other task to learn how to begin carrying that with us, in a sense, into our daily life. So the activities of our daily life doesn't cause us to sacrifice our presence of mind, our presence of being, our beingness. So to be mindful, to be aware, to be recollected, to have a kind of presence that is so powerful or so significant, so valuable, that some people would call it the presence of God, to notice what's happening, to be content that's enough just to know what's arisen. Nothing more needs to happen. To not to make things go away, but to see more deeply. To see into things more deeply, have a deeper sense of life or experience of beingness in our encounter with what's going on. To add depth. Part of the function of mindfulness is to add depth to our experience. Depth of who we are and what the experience is. By stopping, stopping, sensing, feeling, seeing, recognizing, what is this that's going on? Well, that's probably enough for me. Thank you for listening. I'm beginning to wonder what's going on for you. We have about 5 minutes. If anybody would like to comment on the talk or something about it or make a question, you're welcome to do that. So in the back there, if you don't, please use the mic.
I just want to say I really like that washing machine.
It's important to use it, the washing machine. Every day, in the washing machine you go.
Going with that washing machine analogy, so suppose if I'm meditating and I just am swarmed with lots and lots of stuff, and I should just be happy that I'm getting all this dirt in my water, not that I'm worried that I'm perfectly serene.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it, but I would start paying a little bit of attention the best you can. And if you find yourself actively fueling the agitation or the scatteredness, whatever word you used, then you want to see if there's some way you can begin not fueling it. Because if you're fueling it, then you're not letting it be the washing machine. But probably you're somehow involved and engaged. And so then the word here might cut through a lot. Just here. Oh, here's a person who's caught up.
Gil, I guess I would like to know what your experience is like as you feel some kind of wild, joyful abandonment. Maybe you're rolling around in the waves with your kids or something that's really just so spontaneous and just involves you and excites you. In those kinds of experiences, are you aware that you're mindful, or are you mostly experiencing just being lost in this wonderfulness and then you come back to it periodically and then you go with abandonment again and then you come back to mindfulness? Or are you mindful all the time, which might kind of take you down a peg? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a little bit hard to answer, I think, because there's so many different situations and contexts for all this. There certainly are times where certain kind of activity of joyous abandonment is a peg down in quality of life. It can feel kind of pleasant and joyful at the time, but actually it's not as deeply satisfying or deeply happy as can come with a kind of more grounded presence of mind that's here. And you can see that sometimes in meditation, where sometimes very strong states of joy can arise in meditation. When that's superseded or transformed into happiness, most people find it a great relief, that happiness is so much better than joy. And it's not less agitated, it's less energetic. Certainly I've been involved in very joyful, enthusiastic, passionate kind of activities in life where I feel like I'm quite present. And sometimes I feel even more so present than usual. I mean, some activities like playing sports, for example, there's a very heightened sense of awareness and presence that can be there. And some athletes even talk about the kind of being in the zone. And there's a kind of abandonment of self-consciousness. But at the same time, there's a very keen mindfulness and presence of what's going on. I've had a kind of joyful, kind of a giddiness, kind of a joyful kind of a way of being where I kind of lose my sense of presence, I'm kind of giddy or a little bit kind of intoxicated with my joy or what's going on. And then sometimes I've made mistakes and said things and done things which I regretted afterwards. And so it was kind of nice, but I wish I was a little bit more, wasn't so intoxicated on the good feelings of what was going on. And then sometimes there are certain activities that I do where sometimes I do abandon my mindfulness or the quality of my presence of mind. I sacrifice it. So even though I encourage people not to do it, there are some times where I do that. And I don't know if it's I always do it wisely. So I don't want to be the example or the model of this. But one example is when I was writing my dissertation at Stanford, I gave myself a three-month block of once I gave myself a three-month dissertation retreat. I told my friends I was on retreat, and all my friends knew what that meant, so the people left me alone. And then later I gave myself 1 month more to finish it up. And during parts of that time, I abandoned a fair amount of my mindfulness in favor of just kind of pouring myself into this activity of dissertation. And it wasn't exactly the kind of pouring into the activity which was relaxing or enlightening. It was a little bit a strain to do it. And I could feel the quality of my mind, my body, kind of decrease. But I felt, since I was committed to seeing this through and being finished with it. And I said, okay, I'm just going to do it intensely for this time and be finished with it, get through this period of time, rather than not do it at all. This is what I know how to do. And so I kind of sacrificed a lot for 3 months so I could just kind of pour myself into it. Sometimes with certain kind of conversations with friends, really good friends, where it gets really lively and fun, and sometimes I let myself be abandoned in the conversation. And usually it's, if I'm careful and wise about making that choice of when I do that, it seems to work out. But occasionally it hasn't worked out so well, and sometimes I sometimes will tease a friend and later say, I shouldn't be teasing my friends. kind of joyfully, kind of happy, kind of. And sometimes teasing is all part of good fun, but sometimes it feels, once was okay, but now I teased my friend three times, What's going on? So is that okay, an answer? Okay of an answer? Last one. If you use this, because we use it because some people have hearing assistant devices, and so even if you speak up, they can't hear.
Yeah, I like both of your metaphors, the cows and the wash machine. And from the cows, it reminded me of a situation I was in today when I was in a meeting and needed to be present and present things, and I found myself getting very uptight, and I was thinking, they're probably watching me be uptight as opposed to listening to what I have to say. Mm-hmm. And I saw myself in your analogy. I wasn't just watching the cows to make sure they dig into the rice. Getting into the rice, I was using a cattle prod on myself to contain myself. Anyway, So my question was going to be, oh, well, my answer to it was, Richard, loosen up. Just, have some fun. Make a joke or something. And I don't remember making jokes, but it did help. So I was going to ask you a question about where does humor come into to this being present? And I may have discovered the answer. This is kind of my question to you in your wash machine analogy, where it seems like once I said that to myself, then it just dissolved some of that tension, kind of like it came out in the wash, because I don't remember myself becoming the jokester, but I didn't. Just after thinking that, I wasn't so uptight.
Well, maybe the joke is on you, but you don't have to tell people that. I mean, it's really something to watch your own mind. And, I mean, it's a kind of, you know, some people are embarrassed and some people are distressed by what they see in their mind. But a good attitude is just be humored by it. I mean, Jesus, you know, where did this come from? And this is amazing, you know. I mean, this is absurd. You know, this is the biggest joke around. And so there's a lot of humor in just watching your own mind and not taking it too seriously. If you don't take it too seriously, you'll probably smile at some of the what goes on in there. Some of the directors in the mind, you know. Boy, where did they come from? And now humor is good. Lighthearted. Relaxing is good. Relaxing is the partner to mindfulness. It's hard to be mindful unless you're. If hard to be mindful without some degree of relaxation. Thank you. I hope this has been useful. I hope it helps your mindfulness practice.